The last habit of the heart. We must strengthen our capacity to create community. What's that look like?
Well, you know, what I like to say to groups is, I know community can be heard as a big word, and the capacity to create community can sound like a big deal. But it doesn't have to be that way at all, and it usually isn't. Most people I know who have created meaningful forms of community around risks they want to take, around heavy lifting they want to do that they don't feel able to do alone, have done this by simply gathering two or three people who understand what they're up to and inviting their systematic encouragement, not just of the person who extended the initial invitation, but of each other, because these are people with a shared understanding of what the problem is and a shared goal of resolving that problem. So, you know, two or three people meeting together in a way that says, we're going to support each other in taking this risk. For example, some of the risks that I was just talking about in school situations where teachers say, no, we're not going to let you divide and conquer us with a merit pay raise system. Or teachers and parents together say, no, we're not going to subject our children to the cruelty of standardized testing. So often things like that have happened with just a few people getting together to tell the truth to each other. What's unfortunate is that these truths, which may seem very obvious to me, may seem very obvious to you, are not seen as obvious in the larger society, where there are a lot of people who are saying, well, we want to hold our teachers accountable, so of course testing is the way to do that. I don't know a good teacher in the world who isn't all for accountability, but I know a lot of good teachers who will say that standardized testing is not the way to exercise accountability or to measure what it is that we ought to be accountable to. So small groups of people who come together to tell each other the truth and to support each other in acting on the truth can make a huge difference. It has to be an intentional act. You know, you can't get online and find a community like this to join. For the most part, you have to create it for yourself. But once it's created, it takes on life as long as together you are doing that which is life-giving for you. You know, I always like to point back to the fact that the civil rights movement, which we look back on as this huge historic event that spun out over a period of, you know, 15 or 20 years in the middle of the 20th century in this country, and which has many famous names connected with it, and which had, you know, which altered the lay and the law of the land. This civil rights movement really in certain ways began at a place called the Highlander Folk School in Tennessee, run by a guy named Miles Horton, who in the middle of the 1950s bought a whole bunch of rocking chairs to sit in this big old farmhouse living room, probably 15, 18 rocking chairs. I've actually sat in one of them in at least a simulation of the original circle, filled those rocking chairs with black people and white people who were ready to talk about what it was like to be black or white at that time and in that place, mid-50s, the South and the Deep South. And out of that honest talking, really the first time in that time and place that whites and blacks had told the truth to each other about life in a racist society. Out of that talk came, in part, the mid-20th century civil rights movement. Included in that circle were people whose names you would not recognize, but there were other people there too, like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King Jr. and Fannie Lou Hamer and others who went on to take visible, sometimes highly visible, roles in the civil rights movement. And it really came from people rocking and talking and telling the truth. There's no more ancient human endeavor or enterprise than that, unless you throw a campfire in the middle and you have them squatting on the ground telling stories around the campfire. It's just the way human beings do business and motivate each other and encourage each other and draw each other forward into hard things to do. I don't know anybody who does meaningful work in the world who doesn't have two or three friends with whom there's an ongoing conversation about what it takes to keep doing this work and how they can support each other in it. So it's not a big deal. It's only a big deal in the midst of a society that has that keeps failing to see what I call the secrets hidden in plain sight. And one of those secrets is we need each other to do the heavy lifting that our times require. And we're available. We just need to ask.
I'll tell you, Parker, every time I talk to you or read you, I find myself inspired. I really do. Just to step up to my capacity and our capacity to actually move things in a way that we think is more life-giving. So,
I think that's the key. And one of the things we can rely on is that all living things have a tropism for life and light, right? They're like a plant.
Mm-hmm.
We're drawn toward it. And all we have to do is to release that in people, sort of uncover the receptors, which are always waiting there for something good to happen.
I love it. What a lovely way to close this session. I mean, that's, again, another hopeful lens that... We just like that conversation you had with that gentleman about the obligations of corporations. You brought humanity into that,
right?
And that opens up a lot more possibilities than what we usually have in this discourse.
That's right. That's the secret ingredient: humanity.
Yeah, yeah, in ourselves and others.
Right.